British Sky Broadcasting presents The Number 23, starring Jim Carrey, Virginia Madsen, Logan Lerman, and Danny Houston. Music by Harry Gregson-Williams. Voiced by Neville Watchhurst on behalf of MCS Agency. The New Line Cinema logo unfolds. A blank sheet of paper. In old-fashioned TypeScript appear rows of numerals, 2-3, 2-3, 2-3, etc. The paper is scrolled down. Among the rows of numerals appear the words, "The Number 23" in red capitals. What looks like blood seeps out from the letters. As the paper continues to scroll down, more words appear. There are 23 letters in the Latin alphabet. Other words stand out from the rows of figures. Hiroshima. The Knights Templar had 23 Grand Masters. The Witch's Sabbath is 23rd June. Shakespeare was born and died on April the 23rd. The Titanic sank on the morning of April 15th, 1912. December the 11th, 1941, the US declared war on Germany. Blood trickles across and seeps through the paper from many angles now. Names and dates continue to flash up at such a rate as to be impossible to absorb. Finally, the entire sheet of paper is deluged with red, and in the centre appears the number 23 in huge letters. A peaceful suburban scene. Young people play in a park. A large van bearing the insignia of the Department of Animal Control. A man sits in the driver's seat. A caption reads, "February the 3rd.
A week ago, the only thing I thought was out of the ordinary was that it was my birthday."
The man wears an official beige uniform. In one hand, he clutches an empty fast food drinks cup and straw. He looks up from his clipboard to see a lady in a bright red coat walking a small white dog. The dog owner gives him a look and walks away in high dudgeon.
Sorry. Just bored.
He spots the clock on his dashboard among photos of a young woman and a small boy. He struggles to close the sliding door of the cab.
Unit 5, come in. Unit 5, come in.
Do you read me, Unit 5?
Of course. Things didn't really start here.
The film seems to go into fast reverse. A caption reads, "December 23rd. The man stands by a Christmas tree."
How do I look?
The truth?
I look like a rock star, don't I?
You look great.
Hey, what's going on with you?
What?
Why are you acting so weird?
What do you mean?
Got drugs on you? Smoking cigarettes? Huh? No, just holding them for
Have
a friend,
Have a good
huh?
time. Have a good time.
Aggie! You okay? Sexy.
Do you hate me?
As much now as the day I met you.
You know, I might be contagious.
I could be immune.
What about the party?
Like they're gonna miss me.
And what about the cake?
I'd like two words on my tombstone. What if? What if I had said screw the cake?
Singleton at Walter.
Not actually, no.
Come on. Why don't you wag your tail at me in the bitch's room?
Sybil.
What if I had been a bit more...
Sybil, I wouldn't wag my tail in the bathroom with you if you were the last bitch on Earth.
Tactful.
Sparrow, I repeat.
We have an unidentified scavenger sighting.
It's 5:01, Sybil.
Oh, then agreed. You're still on duty.
Sounds
delicious. Can I get it to go?
Okay.
Walter, sent to the scene by the woman he jilted at the party, moves cautiously into the backyard of the Chinese restaurant, clutching a noose. A large dog growls.
Come to Papa.
Maybe you'd like to hear a story. Yeah.
Once upon a time, there was a dog who lived a life of terror. He feared no one. But although his teeth were sharp and his belly full, his heart was empty. He decided to go on a journey to a land far, far away. We came upon a wooden shack one day with a thin old man inside, and he invited him in. The dog was overjoyed, and that night, warm smoke billowed from the chimney above. But oh, what odd smelling smoke this was. You see, the land was China. And in China, they eat dog.
Throughout the story, he has been edging closer and now snares the animal.
Let me see who your irresponsible owner is.
He reaches for the tag on the dog's collar, which reads Ned. The light flashing from the silver disc seems to mesmerize Walter. The dog takes advantage of this and bites Walter on the hand and succeeds in breaking free.
Damn it! Didn't like my story, huh? That's all right. I can take criticism.
Nursing his wounded arm, Walter throws the noose back into the rear of his van and takes out a rifle. In a pretty pink-painted shop signed Agatha's Cakes, Walter's blonde wife carefully puts a cake in a box and, turning out the lights, goes out through the door. The dog lollops through an area of woodland and through a gate into a graveyard. Walter runs onto the scene, slows up and looks at his watch. The dog, sitting by a gravestone, casts a look back at Walter.
All right, buddy. Pick a spot.
Walter lowers the rifle again and peers into the shadows.
Now where'd you go?
Walter stands among the gravestones, looking around in perplexity. A strong wind seems to be picking up. The gravestone from where the dog has mysteriously disappeared is inscribed with the name Laura Tollins. Agatha, still holding her boxed cake, stands waiting on a curb near a second-hand bookshop called A Novel Fate. She is now browsing among the books set out on a stall on the pavement. She turns and looks through the doorway of the shop, seemingly intrigued by a bright orangey-red book she spots leaning on a shelf at the rear down a narrow corridor of bookcases. She advances towards it. The cover of the book reads, The Number 23. Walter arrives at the curb where Agatha has been waiting.
Destiny. Maybe that's too big a word for it. But if I had been nicer to Sybil, she never would have sent me after that dog. I wouldn't have been late to meet Agatha. And none of this would have happened. But I was late. And that's all it took.
He enters the bookshop. The dog looks on.
Take a look at that. Yeah, try not to throw up. Nasty, evil dog. That's what Ned stands for. If I ever see him again, he's gonna be Ned with 2 D's. Nasty, evil, dead dog.
All right, now take a deep breath.
Dead Ned, that's what he's gonna be.
And remember, it's your birthday, okay?
Yeah, I've been thinking about that.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it we go and see your friends on my birthday?
Probably because you don't have any.
Oh. Makes sense. So I'm older, I'm disfigured, and I'm spending an evening in hell.
No.
I suppose I'm buying that for you, too.
Well, actually, I've had a good long time to flip through it. Why don't you give it a try?
Have some writer fill my head with nonsense? I'll wait for the movie.
You don't know what you're missing.
And yet, life goes on. Number 23, Novel of Obsession by Topsy Kretz.
A heart-wrenching odyssey into paranoia, one of the most horrifying metamorphoses ever told. Beware the dog next door. Get out of here. Are you kidding me?
I'm buying this for you. Okay, would you get the cake?
Yeah.
February 3rd. That makes me Aquarius. Experts say friends are vitally important.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Hey.
I'm sorry we're late.
Nothing a kiss won't cure.
Oh.
I am living proof of the fallacy of astrology.
Hi.
How's your arm, Bertha? Okay.
Just waiting for it to fall off.
I'm thinking it'll bite you somewhere else, huh?
Fourth word. Fourth word.
5 seconds.
Birds!
Butterflies!
Birds!
Flies!
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 The flies!
Yes!
Okay, your next next.
Thank you.
As the boisterous game of charades continues in the living room, Walter has absented himself. He finds the copy of the number 23 in Agatha's bag in one of the bedrooms.
All the characters in this book are fictitious, and anyone finding a resemblance to actual persons, living or dead, should proceed no further.
Walter raises his eyes from the foreword. A spot of blood appears on the page.
Now it's time for birthday sex. I love birthday sex.
Walter sees his son kissing a girl in the front room.
You know what?
What?
Let's sit out here for a while.
Oh, honey.
Come on. Be romantic.
Yeah, but it's also cold.
Here. Take my coat.
Your jacket. Take it. I'll call you.
The boy gets rid of the girl, tidies himself up, and opens the front door.
Mom, Dad, I thought I heard voices.
Well, you know, if someone was in bed asleep the way they were supposed to be, they wouldn't hear any voices.
In bed? Okay. Oh, Dad, I forgot to give you this. Here.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I wrapped it myself.
Yeah, I accept bribes any time of the day or night. Back door?
It's right down the alley.
Wow, that's cool. Robin? She's a nice girl. Make sure she stays that way.
All right. Good night, Dad. Thanks. Happy birthday.
Thanks.
Walter sets Robin's gift, a mug emblazoned with the slogan Father of the Year, down on a side table on which lies the book, the number 23. He picks it up.
Chapter 1. You can call me Fingerling. It's not my real name. It came from a book I read as a child. Fingerling at the zoo. Paper flap long gone. It had a green hardback cover and mottled texture. It was possibly my very first book. Funny. I can't recall what it was about. The only thing I remember is the name. Fingerling. I wished it was mine. And now it is.
A title reads February the 4th. Walter sits in front of a desk bearing a name tag, Dr. Alice Mortimer, PhD, behavioral psychologist. He adjusts a china dog. She glares.
This is your first bite?
First animal one, yes. My wife, she has these gnawing urges in her sleep and...
Tell me about this canine, Ned. What would you do if you came across him again?
If I was in my truck, I'd accelerate until I heard a thud. I'm sorry, I'm joking. This is just silly.
Mr. Sparrow, animal control regulations state that any officer suffering at the hands of an animal must undergo psychological counseling within 7 days to evaluate their state of mind.
I gave him my arm on a platter. Can't blame a creature of lower intelligence for that. I made a mistake, okay? Write that down. I made a mistake. It's my fault. Like when I told my wife she could choose the color for the living room walls, you know? Not that women are lower intelligence, just...
Have a good day, Mr. Sparrow.
No, Agatha's the most intelligent person I know. What she sees in me, I'm not sure. Look, I love my job, and I'm good at it.
Ned got away.
Well, yeah, but...
Don't worry. Apart from a flawed sense of humor, I'm giving you a clean bill of health. You're not a danger to anyone. That's why you can go and have a whole day off.
Really? I'll take it.
Mr. Sparrow.
Yeah?
What color did your wife choose for the walls?
Red. Blood red.
Walter turns from one of the vibrant red walls and sits down on his sofa with his book.
Chapter 2. Imagine me, if you must, as someone you once knew. Someone perhaps you liked. Or better yet, imagine me as you. As a kid, I was top of my class. Not because I liked studying, but because I realized that an education was my best shot at getting out. See, the stork dropped me in a small dust bowl of a town. There wasn't anything wrong with it. As far as boring towns go, I'm sure it ranked above average. I had friends, but I always felt alone. No one ever left. But I wasn't gonna die here. As much as I loved him, I didn't want to be anything like my dad. He seemed so distant and sad. Numbers were his life. He was an accountant, and I guess he expected me to take over the business he had built. But I had other plans. My mom was tickled pink on my 8th birthday when I announced I wanted to be a detective. Can't say the same for my father. It really put the kibosh on his master plan, and it fueled his hatred for the widow Dobkins. She lived next door. It sounds odd, but her dog Elfie is the reason I became a detective. The grass is always greener on the other side, at least according to Elfie. That's why he was always in our yard, and it was my job to catch him. But I never crossed the fence into the widow Dobkins' yard. That was my father's rule. On my 8th birthday, I broke the rule.
The small dog has entered the widow's house and now leads the way up the polished oak staircase.
Now, I must admit that my loneliness and obsession with detective stories had fueled fantasies. So I'm not sure of all the details, except one. The widow Dobkins was dead.
A youngish blonde woman in vivid red lipstick and a polka dot dress lies sprawled on the bed. Her wrists are streaked with blood.
It was a whole hour before the doctor arrived, and in that uncertain hour, my 8-year-old mind raced. I decided that the widow Dobkins was killed by a man with a deranged mind, a mind such as our town had never seen before. No one would be safe from him, not even his loved ones, especially his loved ones. Of course, the doctor later concluded it was suicide, but I never believed it. By then, my mind had been opened to a whole new existence. From this, a detective was born. Detective Fingerling.
Walter sits reading among boxes in the basement.
Hey, there you are. What are you doing?
I'll clean this up later.
Filling your head with nonsense, are you?
Did you read this?
Most of it. It's very creative.
This Fingerling guy.
Yeah, it's a cool name.
Yeah. What'd you make of him?
I loved him at the... Well, at the beginning I did.
What do you mean at the beginning?
Well, how far have you gotten?
Oh, 2 chapters.
Yeah. Oh. Honey, will you move this ladder for me? Just right over here.
You know, hon, this Fingerling guy reminds me of my life. It's so weird. Like, it's like my childhood, my memories, you know?
Honey, will you hand me that blue paint?
Here.
Fingerling is nothing like you.
Oh, yeah? Look at that. Fingerling at the zoo. My mother read it to me when I was a kid.
Well, I'm sure a lot of people read that as a kid.
Did you?
No.
Ah!
But you know what? Every time I read a book, it's like the author stole a part of me that I thought only I knew. Someday I'm gonna write a book and I'll do it to somebody else.
Well, no, hon. It's just really kind of strange.
You know what? There's a lot of neighborhoods with houses just like yours, with streets just like yours.
Yeah? With dogs next door?
Oh, your neighbor had a dog. Well, that's shocking.
It wasn't called Alfie. It was called Chief. Mischief, my father called it. Used to escape all the time. That's why I became an ACO.
Fingerling's a detective.
I used to collect detective magazines. And the widow next door, Mrs. Dobkins, well, that's like my mom. She died on my 8th birthday.
I got freaking goosebumps.
Honey, keep reading, okay? Soon you will discover that Fingerling is nothing like you.
Somebody wrote a book about Dad?
No.
Yes?
How's school?
Horrible. Am I in it? I mean, if the book's about Dad, then I should have like a starring role or something.
Yes, you should, and yet you don't. Now, what do you think that means?
Yeah, jeez.
Who's that?
Fabrizia.
Fabrizia?
A woman in stilettos sashays elegantly along a darkened street at the end of which burns a wrecked car.
Got a big plan, this mindset, maybe it's right at the right place and right time, maybe tonight in a whisper or handshake, sending a sign, wanna make out and kiss hard, wait, never mind, late night in passing, mention it flip to her best friend, it's no thing, maybe it's slip, but the slip turns to terror and a crush to like.
She comes level with Fingerling, who is Walter in a much cooler guise, and gives him a sultry look. The pair are now removing each other's clothes, revealing Fingerling's startling tattoos of black twining thorns. They engage in passionate sex. The book lies on Walter's bedside table. He lies in bed, not sleeping, but gazing at the book. He turns onto his back, a woeful expression on his face. The shadowy bedroom is flooded by a pulse of light as if from a lighthouse. Walter looks nervously towards the ceiling on which are cast shadows as if of prison bars and a man raising a fearful-looking knife. Walter closes his eyes. He turns back to look at the book. Walter's van is parked up. He sits reading the book on a wooden picnic table. A caption reads, February the 5th.
Chapter 5. I meet the suicide blonde.
Fingerling, hair slicked back like Nick Cave, is admitted into an apartment. He walks slowly through the corridor and into the main space, which is strangely festooned with sheets of paper all over the walls. To one side, bathed in white light, a woman in a short dress stands on a chair with a noose around her neck. The woman turns, smiling foxily at Fingerling, who holds up his ID badge.
I got a tip from your neighborhood watch.
I know what you're up to. This befriend me crap, it won't work. Come any closer and I'll do it.
Well, if you don't, it's my birthday today. You end up hanging yourself, it'll be the worst one ever.
You're pathetic. I'm serious, I'll do it.
Hanging. It's a painful thing. Most people get the noose wrong. Walking around with a permanent necklace. Agonizing reminder how fucking pitiful they are. Come on, let's talk. If you're still bummed, I'll put one right between your eyes.
He pulls back his lapel to reveal a pistol in a holster.
I'm a good shot.
Her expression softens.
Is it really your birthday?
Fingerling pulls the rope down from the beam and slings it away. She brings him a cup of coffee.
The suicide blonde tells me she was a good person once. But now...
I'm a bad person. I don't want to make you bad.
You don't have that power.
Go see my ex-boyfriend. He'll show you.
We should have gotten out of there. Right at that moment. But then she said it.
It's this number! This fucking number! 23. It rules my world.
It's my father's fault. He said he'd found a way to beat the number. That he beat it. That I was safe. He said Daddy loves you. And he's gonna do something to guarantee
that
you don't
inherit the curse.
A man sitting by the body of the widow puts a gun to his head.
He was wrong. His guarantee wasn't worth the blood it was written in. I guess Daddy didn't love me enough.
Everywhere, dates, times. License plate numbers, pages of books, even elevator floor lights. Soon I found it was in my name. It was in the words I spoke. Nothing. Nothing is safe.
Pink is my favorite color. Do you know what pink is?
Red, 27, white, 65. 65 is 27, 92. Pink has four letters. 92 divided by four. 20 fucking three!
I'll be honest. I didn't get it. I asked her the only question I could muster.
Any more coffee?
It was important to keep her talking, so I tell her a story.
I had this uncle. His name was Charlie. And one day he read in his stars that he was going to fall in love with a woman in red. So he went out looking all day long, and he found one. 6 months later, they were married.
You're lying.
2 years later, the woman in red divorces my uncle. Takes him for everything he's got. He's out there right now. This very moment. Still looking for the woman in red. Because she just got the wrong one.
And this is supposed to make me feel better, how?
You look smarter than my Uncle Charlie.
She has a face meant to smile. And as I exit the building, I figure it's another job well done.
Onto the sidewalk in front of Fingerling smashes the body of the suicide blonde. Her inert form lies grotesque and motionless. He kneels, a range of emotions passing across his face. The blonde's blue eyes stare sightlessly back at him.
The next day, I traced the ex-boyfriend suicide blonde mentioned. Burning coffee grounds is an old trick cops use to take away the smell of death at a crime scene. But somebody had used all the coffee.
Fingerling examines a blood-stained knife contained in a forensic polythene bag. Police photographers carry on around him.
When I tell Fabrizi about the suicide blonde, she begs me to take her to the apartment. Her reaction is pure Fabrizia. Death and sex. What a turn-on. As the pages fell from the walls, the scope of the suicide blonde's obsession became clear. She had reduced everything to 23. When I found out what her name was, that added up too. Maybe it was just a coincidence. I mean, a name is just a name, and a number is just a number. Isn't it?
Walter sits on the picnic bench looking at the book. Scrawled inside are the letters of the alphabet, each ascribed its own number. Two boys in numbered football shirts jog past in such a way that their shirts read 23. Walter appears spooked and stares back at the book. He stands in a bookshop now.
It's self-printed, self-published, and it's by an author I've never heard of.
The shopkeeper consults his computer.
Looks like Autopsy here hasn't written anything before or after since.
Walter catches sight of the last figure rung up on the antique till, 2305. An old Jeep is parked outside Walter's house.
Walter, what are you doing?
Check this out. Walter Sparrow doesn't work. But if I use my middle name...
Walter.
51197. Isn't that amazing?
What?
It's all 23. My birthday, 23. Driver's license, social security number, everything. I was born at 11:12 p.m. 11 plus 12. It's like it's imitating my life.
You can't be serious.
The author knows so much about me. It's as if he chose me.
Is this what you've been doing all day? Have you finished the book?
Not yet.
You've concerned yourself with minutia and you've drawn wild conclusions from them. What about the fact that Fingerling becomes a killer?
A killer?
And just how many people have you killed?
Wait, who gets killed?
Ask Mr. Fingerling. I'm sorry, honey.
Why this color? Why did you choose this color?
I don't know, you tell me.
Red number 5. RED is 27 plus 5 is 32, which is?
You're reaching now.
Sure, there are differences. Fingerling's a detective. I'm a dog catcher. He met Fabrizio when he was 32, whereas I met you when I was...
23.
And the day we met was?
September 14th.
9/14. 14 plus 9 is?
23.
We married October 13th. 10/13. 23. Suicide Blonde said it ruled her world. She killed because of it. Then she handed it on to Fingerling on his 32nd birthday. 23 reversed. Fingerling called it fate. Do you know what fate is? 32. I rest my case, Your Honor.
Honey, I think you're taking this seriously.
Wait, wait, wait. We live at 18/14. I mean, 18 is 1 plus 8, which equals 9. And 9 plus 14 is also 23. 14 is 1 plus 4, which equals 5. And 5 plus 18 is 23, too.
Oh, my God.
All right, Robin, please, don't you start this nonsense.
This is not nonsense. I mean, 5 plus 18 is 23.
Well, if the book were 27 or 150, you could do the same thing.
18 plus 14 is 32.
23 reversed. Spooky, huh?
Chapter 7. The Suicide Blonde had given Fabrizio a taste for new thrills. I played along, but all I could think about was the number.
Thanks.
I didn't tell her that the clock behind the desk read 9:14.
Fingerling and Fabrizio, who is Agatha with dark hair, check into a seedy hotel. He ties her to the bed.
Pretend you have a knife. Pretend you have a knife. You're gonna hurt me.
You shut up, bitch. Or you die.
Of course, I would never really harm Fabrizio. I loved her. And I thought she loved me.
Fingerling swaggers across the room and comes up behind Fabrizio at the bathroom mirror. He puts an arm around her waist and then lifts a knife and cuts her throat.
I started having terrible nightmares.
She turns to him, her throat perfectly intact. Agatha lies sleeping. Walter lies next to her, awake and brooding. His attention is once more drawn to the ceiling, on which the shadow of a man is stabbing downwards repeatedly with the huge knife. Walter puts a hand to his face and then turns to lie on his side facing Agatha. A thought seems to come to him and he leans up, staring across the room. The closet door opens. Walter leans in, holding the book and counting off Agatha's shoes with one finger.
8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. What are you doing?
Reading.
You're insane.
Morning, the front of Walter's house. A caption reads, February the 6th. Agatha comes down the stairs, wrapping herself in her dressing gown. Spotting Walter sleeping uncovered on the sofa, she fetches a rug and throws it over him. She notices biro scrawls all over his forearm. She bends to take a closer look. From amongst the inky mess on his arm, what stick out are the words Agatha scored through, directly above the words kill her. Her expression registers concern, if not actual alarm. She gets up, crosses the room and picks up the cordless phone.
Isaac?
Simply put, it's a box that collects orgone energy.
We'll talk about Willem Reich next week. Thank you for coming. Well, it sounds like a fascinating read. Of course, there exist far too few books where the main character plays a saxophone. I wasn't aware you also played.
I don't. That's just it. It doesn't all match. It's the number. I'm seeing it everywhere.
Well, the conspiracy buffs would say, of course. After all, the world spins on an axis of 23 degrees. When you tell them it's actually 23.5, they say 5 is simply 2 plus 3. 23 is very good at this particular game.
Game?
Yeah. Paranoia. There's a fair bit of literature in the 23 enigma.
There is.
There are 23 axioms to Euclid's geometry. The human body consists of 46 chromosomes, 23 from each parent. Blood takes 23 seconds to circulate. The Mayans believed the end of the world would occur December 12, 2012. 20 plus 12 is?
23 reversed. Or 20 plus 1 plus 2. So what is this? What is 23?
Is it
God?
2 divided by 3, 0.666. 666, number of the devil. There are only 22 chapters in the book of Revelations. We all know how that ends.
So is 23 a blessing or a curse?
Well, what's true is that there's a select group of people that take delight in perpetuating the number's infamy. Lucky 7, unlucky 13, ball players' lucky shoes. People only pray because they believe that God will help them if they do. This is magical thinking, non-scientific causal reasoning. You're looking for 23. So you're finding it.
Agatha thinks I'm nuts.
Finish the book. And if, after reading it in its entirety, you still believe the subject to be you, then whoever wrote it knows you very well, and only they can give you your answer.
It's a good idea.
And in the meantime, I can speak to Agatha if you like.
Walter's house. He lies on a couch reading the book.
Night after night, I killed Fabrizia in my dreams. I explained to the department shrink what her full name added up to.
23.
What do you think that means?
I don't know. Miles? Maybe I should be a fucking accountant.
The wise Dr. Phoenix recommends I take a break.
Maybe you should take a break.
Like time is gonna heal me.
Time is a gentleman.
Time is just a counting system. Numbers with meaning attached to them. Still, a break is what he prescribes. He called it...
emotional leave.
So you're not a detective anymore.
Fabrizio was not impressed.
I'm a detective on vacation.
And you don't have a gun?
I still have these.
Maybe you should just get some sleep tonight.
Fabrizio walks off, leaving Fingerling foolishly holding his handcuffs. Fingerling stands in his bedroom, drinking beer from the bottle and looking down at Fabrizio's neatly arranged collection of shoes.
The number was everywhere. At this point, I don't need to tell you how many pairs of shoes she had.
Walter raises his eyes from his book. Fingerling rips all of Fabrizio's clothes violently from the rail in her closet. Fabrizia stalks back out from the bedroom holding a pair of scarlet stilettos.
What are these shoes doing in the trash?
Did you know you had 23 pair?
Oh! You're insane!
The Hiroshima bomb was dropped at 8:15. 8 plus 15 is 23. Waco, Texas and the Oklahoma City bombing both happened on April 19th. 4 plus 19 is 23. Tropic of Cancer, 23.5 degrees north. Capricorn, 23.5 degrees south. 10886 is the number Al Capone wore on his uniform in prison. Ted Bundy was executed on the 23rd of January. It's all 23. She didn't understand, which was fine because neither did I. All I knew was, the number had gone after suicide blonde, Isabel Lydia Hunt.
was coming after me.
I can speak to Fabrizio if you like.
I believe he said it in total innocence at the time.
Fingerling takes from Professor Phoenix's hand a picture of Fabrizio. Fabrizio and Phoenix now sit head to head in a cheap cafe. He reaches for her chin and kisses her. Across the dingy street stands Fingerling, observing them.
But looking back?
I can speak to Fabrizio if you like.
I wish I'd reacted differently.
Phoenix is hurled through the window of his office and flails through the air. Fingerling stands framed by the smashed window, watching as Phoenix falls and smashes onto the roadway below. The body has landed at Fingerling's own feet in the dingy street. He looks across to the cafe where Phoenix now caresses Fabrizia's exposed thigh.
I should have realized the truth. I know it's absurd, but even the color of his tie betrayed him.
Walter recalls his meeting with Isaac, who wears a pink tie.
Do you know what pink is?
Red.
27, white, 65, 65 to 27, 92. Pink has four letters, 92 divided by four. 20 fucking three!
In the meantime, I can speak to Agatha, if you like.
Paranoia. 23 is very good at this particular
paranoia. In the meantime, I can speak to
you.
Point 3 degrees. We told them it's actually 23.5. They say 5. It's simply 2 plus 3.
Walter walks at speed through a busy street. Everywhere around him, numbers appear or combine to make 23. Arriving at Agatha's cake shop, he finds the door locked. He peers through to see Isaac talking to Agatha. He spots in the window a display of sharp knives. At home now, he picks up a photo of Agatha and Isaac.
In the meantime, I can speak to Agatha, if you like.
Outwardly calmer now, he sits at a table with the book.
Chapter 21.
In a patch of woodland, Phoenix lies on the ground. Fabrizia, naked, straddles him. Behind a tree close by stands Fingerling, looking grim. Walter wakes up in bed. He leans across to look at his clock, which at that moment changes from 11:11 to 11:12. He prowls through the living room with its blood-red walls. He goes into the kitchen, takes a glass from the cupboard, and turns on the tap. Placing his hand under the running water, he becomes aware that it is wet with blood. He drops the glass. He stares in horror at his blood-stained hand and then beyond it to the single large knife standing in the knife block. He comes back into his bedroom. He finds on his side of the bed another knife covered in blood. He looks across to where Agatha lies. He pulls back the covers. Her upper body is covered in blood.
God! Hank! Oh God! Oh God! It's gonna be all right. Go! No!
Walter awakes, lying on his back in bed. He hesitates before looking to his right to where Agatha lies. He peers beneath the covers and then lays back in relief. He leans across to look at his clock, just in time to see it turn to 11:12. Grim-faced, he gets up from the bed. Agatha wakes, looks round, and then crosses to the window, The old-fashioned Jeep is pulling out into the road. Agatha comes down the stairs. She spots a note on the table.
Ag, I don't want you to be worried. I just need one night to clear my head. Please don't give up on me. Your loving, dog-catching husband, Walter.
Rain has fallen on the windscreen of the vehicle. Walter sits at the wheel. He waits at a light in the middle of a town. A bus approaches and passes close to him. His eye is drawn to a red neon vacancy sign.
Why that street? Why that hotel? Like it was my choice.
He crosses the street to the seedy-looking King Edward Hotel. He enters the Spartan lobby. A man with long grey hair and a birthmark on his face sits dejectedly by his walking frame. Walter crosses to the reception desk. A thin man with lank hair stands to greet him.
Morning.
What can I do for you?
Yeah, I'd like a room.
Sign the register.
Twenty-seven's the quietest.
What about 23?
We've been experiencing some plumbing problems with 23.
A messily painted door bearing the number 23 in brass letters. Inside a hotel room with water stains on the wooden paneling, Walter dumps his bag on the narrow bed and removes his jacket. He pulls the book out from his bag and sits to read it.
Chapter 22 was as I feared.
Into Fingerling's enormous loft apartment steps Miles Phoenix. He stoops to pick up a knife lying on the floor and crosses the room to the brass bed where Fabrizia lies, tied to the bedstead and covered by a crimson lamé sheet. He pulls back the sheet to reveal Fabrizia's blood-soaked body. He reaches across and feels for a pulse in her throat. As he backs away in horror, Fingerling's blood-streaked face appears stock still through a crack of a curtain. He stares at the scene. Phoenix is helped into the rear seat of a police squad car. Reporters make notes. Fingerling crosses the street, his head down. Fingerling clutches his saxophone and paces the floor of a shabby hotel room. He launches his saxophone at a mirrored cabinet. Pulling open the doors of the balcony, he steps out as if preparing to throw himself off. Back in his hotel room, Walter turns the pages to discover that the final dozen or so leaves are completely empty.
It wasn't the happiest of endings. It wasn't an ending at all. After chapter 22, there was nothing but the question. Had the number lived to kill another day? The number had gone after Fingerling. And now it was coming after me.
Walter looks down to see Ned the dog in the street.
You. It's all your fault. You had made me late.
The dog runs at speed up the street. Walter pulls his rifle from his bag. The dog runs across snow-speckled ground towards the graveyard. Walter arrives at a run.
Place to rest in peace. Yes!
Walter hits his mark with a tranquilizing dart. The dog rolls over by the grave of Laura Tollins.
You son of a bitch.
It's okay, boy. You'll get up a couple of hours with a bad headache, that's all.
Not so tough now, are you? Nasty, evil dog. Ned. L-M-N 14 A-B-C. Shit.
Ned! Ned! I'm Father Sebastian. I trust there's an explanation for this.
He's just sleeping, Father. I'm an animal control officer. Is this your dog?
It belongs to Barnaby, my gardener.
Don't worry, Barnaby. He's all right. He's just sleeping.
Why did you name him Ned?
He didn't. He took Ned in as a stray. He likes graveyards. He sits and watches the stones.
Like he was watching over them.
That's how he got his nickname, Guardian of the Dead. Lately, it's been this one.
Oh, no way.
What's wrong, son?
She died on her 23rd birthday.
Well, we can only assume.
What?
That she died. They never found a body. This is only a marker.
Where have you been?
Library. It's not just a book. It's true. The number screws with your mind. Makes you do terrible things.
Perhaps I should be going.
No. I want you to see this.
All of you.
There was a college girl named Laura Tollins who was murdered. They never found her body, but her bed was soaked in so much blood. This is the man who killed her, Kyle Flinch. Police found a murder weapon, a butcher's knife, with his prints all over it.
Well, Walter, this was nearly 15 years ago.
Egg, he wasn't just her psychology professor. They were lovers. Everything they did together, sexually, was exactly like the characters in the book. He said it was her idea to buy the knife. She wanted to fake an attack. Kyle Flinch is top secrets. The book is his warped literary confession.
Agatha said a dog told you this.
Ned isn't just a dog. He's the guardian of the dead.
But what about all these 23s? And your name and everything? Is it all just a coincidence?
I don't know. But I know who can tell me.
A caption reads February the 8th. Walter's vehicle moves along the perimeter road of what appears to be an enormous wire-fenced prison. A man stands in semi-darkness behind a wire grill as a warder backs out and locks the door on him.
Well, you're 2 days early.
You knew I would come?
Porters always come on the 10th.
The day you killed Laura Tollins.
The day she was taken from me.
I'm not a reporter. My name is Walter Sparrow. I was born February 3rd.
Happy belated birthday.
February 3rd, 2-3.
Yeah.
Don't pretend you don't know. Top secrets. I read your book. Tell me about the number. Is that why you killed her? I need to know. You have to tell me.
The heavily bearded prisoner steps up to the grill.
What happened to you? I'm afraid it's happening to me.
What happened to me? You want to know the worst thing about being in prison? Your family, your sister, your parents, they come to visit you. Over time, though, the visits get less, and your sister stops coming at all. And you start to notice your mother won't look you in the eye. Pretty soon she stops coming too. Eventually your father tells you your sister had a breakdown. Unable to deal with having a murderer for a brother. Now there's tears in his eyes when he says this, but he's not sad. He's angry. That's the last time you ever see him. I didn't kill Laura. I loved her.
And I didn't write a book about a number.
You're lying.
I'm in prison for a crime I did not commit, Mr. Sparrow. Somehow I think your problems are bigger than mine.
The man withdraws into the shadows.
Fucking liar!
If I was to write a book, I wouldn't use a ridiculous name like Top Secrets.
He gives Walter a withering look. Walter stares back forlornly as the man walks back to the door. Walter studies the cover of the book, bearing the subtitle A Novel of Obsession by Top Secrets. The prisoner is escorted away. Walter hurries back out to where Agatha and Robin wait by the fence.
Real convincing about his innocence.
Well, killers usually are. His fingerprints were on the knife. Her blood was on his hands when he dialed 911.
No. He's innocent.
He hands her a piece of paper.
Oh, because his name doesn't add up to 23?
The real killer? The author? He's still out there. I have to find him.
Wait, I know how you can find him.
Robin sits up in bed reading a book by the light of a torch.
Last night, when I was reading the book, I found a P.O. box address in the back.
Robin peels two pages apart to reveal the address in West Highland, USA. Robin and his parents prepare to mail a large carton.
Are you sure you don't want anything in this?
Just a snow.
When do you want to get there?
Tomorrow. Morning.
We'll have to go express.
Fine.
Is that all?
No. We want 23 of them.
Walter and Agatha lie facing each other in bed.
I dreamt that I killed you, Ag. Fingerling had the same dream about...
I'm going with you today. And all this is going to come to an end. You wouldn't hurt me, Walter. You wouldn't hurt anyone. Ever.
How do you know?
The family pull up in a street. A delivery van is parked across the way. A caption reads, February the 9th.
There's your boxes, kiddo. Now we'll see if somebody shows up.
This may not be the author. He may not even be a man.
Well, we'll know soon enough.
An army of staff from the Midtown mail office carry the huge but almost weightless boxes inside. The Sparrow family wait in their vehicle. An elderly man in a long black coat and Homburg hat crosses the rain-swept street to the mail office.
Walter, look.
What?
Somebody's gone in.
That's him. It's gotta be him.
You think?
Yeah, I mean, look at him. It's gotta be him.
The man cuts open a carton full of nothing but polystyrene petals.
Game's over, Top Secrets.
Walter holds up the book. The man turns. He has receding grey hair and a beard. He stares at Walter in what seems to be mute rage. Finally, he lunges at him with the knife.
You should be dead. You should be dead.
Walter! No!
Stop! Who are you? The number. What does it mean?
I think you know.
The old man cuts his own throat.
Oh my God, get an ambulance!
Watch out!
Get an ambulance!
Don't you die on me. You hear me? Don't you die.
Walter, please.
He's the only person who can help us get back to normal.
Honey, you're not helping, okay? Now I want you to take Robin and go home. This man needs a hospital. I'll take care of it.
But he knows, hon.
Take Robin and go home. I said, I'll take care of it.
Walter moves away towards where Robin stands in shock.
He knows. Shit.
Hard to get rid of.
What?
It's insane.
What was driving you insane?
Hard. Institute. go there. You'll see.
Oh my God.
Agatha spots the mathematical formulae inscribed on the old man's palm and forearm. She draws from his pocket a laminated pass.
Agatha?
Walter, he didn't make it. I'm so sorry.
Well, did he say anything?
No. I'm sorry.
Did you find out who he was?
No. I'll be home in a little while.
Walter sits back on the sofa. Agatha, standing at a payphone in a darkened street, looks across at a Gothic building bearing the inscription Nathaniel's Institute. She holds up the laminated pass from the old man's pocket. It is a pass for the Institute in the name of Dr. Sirius Leary, PhD. She crosses the street. Beyond metal gates, steps lead up to the enormous darkened building. She grabs hold of the gates and pulls. Having managed to open one of the gates, she heads up the steps. She walks through a derelict, darkened hallway. She turns, but then walks on. The pigeons cause her to shy away. Walter clutches the book, counting off the words and periodically circling one in biro. Agatha continues along a balcony in the spooky building. Walter circles hell, is, waiting, and sparrow.
Are you kidding me? Robin!
Agatha continues on through the ruined institute. She comes to a door. She brushes dust from one brass plate, revealing the number 318, then from another on which is engraved Dr. Sirius Leary, Professor of Psychiatry. She rattles a locked filing cabinet. She tries to force the drawer of a desk. Something seems to grab her attention. A shadow of the number 2 is cast onto the desk. Behind her on the wall is scrawled the number 3. She turns to look at the wall. The 3 has reversed itself.
Every 23rd word on every 23rd page. Visit Casanova Spark. Dig beneath the steps to heaven.
Who's Casanova Spark?
It's not a person.
I warn you, hell is waiting, Sparrow Man.
We need to go.
Walter pins up a note reading, "Dear Ag, we have gone to Casanova's Park." Agatha illuminates the darkness by turning on a red ceiling bulb. Oddly, candles are already burning in the small room where she now stands. The walls are covered in scrawled numbers. Books are piled on low tables. Agatha seems to see Leary deliriously writing on the walls. Agatha looks around the room at the mattress on the floor and at a metal trunk covered with an old shirt. She pushes the shirt aside, revealing stenciled lettering Sparrow W, case number 85307. She crouches hesitantly next to it. Behind her, a man walks into the room. Walter pulls up by the sign announcing Casanova's Park. Another sign points to the steps to heaven.
Want to take bets that there's 23 of them?
What? 20, 21, 22.
Are you sure you want to do this?
They get to work with their spades.
What if Mom was right? What if that man wasn't the author? What if he was just the guy's father or something?
Sounds like a lot of what ifs.
Wouldn't that mean that the real killer's still out there?
Walter scans the surrounding darkness with his flashlight.
Did you hear something?
You're starting to sound like me, kiddo.
Walter resumes digging, but immediately stops as if he has hit something.
Give me the light. Give me the light!
Oh, my.
Walter backs closer to Robin, and they stare in horror at the human skull illuminated in the beam of the torch. As the pair beat a hasty retreat, it seems they're being observed by someone hidden in the trees.
There's one! Right there!
You stay here! You need to send someone to Casanova's Park.
A policeman shines his torch into the hole.
Is this your idea of a joke? It's empty.
What? It was right there!
We're not crazy. We circled every 23rd word on every 23rd page, and it told us to come down here. And I sound completely crazy, don't I?
Let's just get some sleep, okay? We're done here. 1023 UTL.
Mom?
Isaac has pulled up in his red Jaguar. Agatha gets out and hurries to Robin. Isaac nods at the disheveled Walter.
Okay.
Yeah.
Isaac starts up his car. Walter sits at the wheel of his old Jeep, casting a dark look towards him.
Skeletons can't just get up and walk away. You were right. That man wasn't the killer. The real killer is still out there, and he knows Dad's onto him. The book. It's got all these secret messages. Every 23rd page.
That's right. Every 23rd page in the book.
Both of you, stop it. Now listen to me. 23 is a number. Okay, there's no magical meaning. Only people can give it that. And I don't care how many lunatics are fantasizing about 23, they're wrong. There's no curse. There's no killer running around out there.
Walter stops 50 meters from where Ned the dog sits in the middle of the road.
That's Ned. Nasty, evil, dead dog.
Dad! Oh, Dad!
The dog remains motionless as the Jeep accelerates towards it. Walter screeches to a halt centimeters from the dog's nose. The family sit gasping in the cab of the vehicle. Walter looks down at Agatha's hand clasping his arm. He notices her fingers are covered in soil. She stands at the kitchen sink, washing her hands. Walter observes her from the doorway.
You. It was you. You moved the skeleton.
Please don't do this, Walter.
But how did you know? Unless... your maiden name is Pink.
Do you know what Pink is?
Red and white. 92 divided by 4.
Someday I'm gonna write a book and I'll do it to somebody else. Walter.
Oh, God.
And whoever wrote it knows you very well, and only they can give you your answers.
You wrote it. Isaac knew all along, didn't he?
Walter, just let it be. Please.
Your top secrets.
He may not even be a man. Don't make me do this.
Why'd you do this? Who have you been living with?
Walter.
He finds a knife in her bag.
What's this for, Egg? What are you going to do with this?
I took it to protect us from whoever we were going to meet at the mailbox facility.
Intending to kill that poor old man who you got to publish your book and protect your little secret.
I'll take care of it.
He was alive before you sent us away.
Robin will hear you.
Oh, we wouldn't want that, would we? Wouldn't want our son to know the horrible truth about his mother.
Mom? Dad, what's going on?
She's top secret. She wrote the book.
No, it's not true. Now your father's going to put down the knife. Aren't you, Walter?
Tell him the truth.
Walter.
Tell him how you took the skeleton.
Yes. Isaac and I took the skeleton.
You did?
And I'd do it again. But I did not write the book.
Don't lie. 13 years, Egg. 13 years of lies! No more!
Don't do this to us, Walter.
Mom, who wrote the book?
Tell him who wrote it. Tell him.
You wrote the book, Walter.
Walter clutches the knife and blinks. Agatha opens the trunk marked Sparrow W. Inside lies Fingerling's saxophone, and beneath a pile of other stuff, a typewritten manuscript.
I found this with the old man's things.
In the basement of their house, she hands Walter the manuscript. She rips off a piece of tape from the front, revealing Walter's name.
You put my name on this?
No.
No. No, no, no. You're lying. She's lying. I didn't write that.
Then who did?
Isaac walks down the steps.
You. It was both of you all the way along, wasn't it?
No.
What is this? What are you doing?
Agatha hands him the saxophone. He stares at it. Images of himself as Fingerling flash into his mind. He throws the instrument violently to the floor. He then spills out the contents of the trunk.
Dad? Dad, what's happening?
Walter, in distress, flicks through a detective magazine.
Walter, we can get you help.
The woman in red.
Supposed to make me feel better, huh?
Walter picks up a small silver chain.
Walter.
An image comes to his mind of his removing the chain from the ankle of a dead girl. He drops it in disgust. Agatha reaches out to touch Walter.
No! Get out of here!
Get your car. Come on.
Let's go.
Come on, honey.
Walter pelts along a street. Images flash up of the Institute, of the blood-soaked body of a woman, of a name scratched onto a wall, a notebook stained with drops of blood. Walter pauses. Then, clutching his left arm, he shambles across the street to the King Edward Hotel. In room number 23, he sits on the bed. His face twitches as he appears to recollect images. The name Laura appears scratched into a green wall. He turns to look at the hotel room wall behind him. He rips away the brown wallpaper, revealing green paint beneath. He hurls the bed out of the way. He stands staring at the wall, which is covered in black scrawl. Scratched at the top are the words, Chapter 23. He reaches out and touches the wall with the palm of his left hand.
Chapter 23. You can call me Fingerling. But my real name is Walter. Walter Paul Sparrow. What you have read so far is not the whole truth. Much has been changed to protect the innocent. And the guilty.
Fingerling stands on the hotel balcony.
I once read that the only philosophical question that matters is whether or not to commit suicide. I guess that makes me a philosopher. could say it was my inheritance. After my mother's death, my father couldn't cope.
The child observes as a man puts a gun to his own temple and shoots.
He didn't leave a note. Just a number. That number followed me from foster home to foster home until college when I met her. Laura Tollens. I thought she would help me forget my father's number. It was a mistake to think I could escape it.
Do it tight. Pretend that you have a knife.
I got a knife.
Cut my shirt.
Cut you some more.
Cut me.
I loved her.
She won.
I thought she loved me.
An esoteric obsession with the number 23 does a thing itself have a mystical power.
Is that a crazy?
Yes. That's the thing.
Until my father's number returned to haunt me.
Walter at college looks into a classroom where Laura is being taught by the bearded man from the prison. She caresses his hand as Walter looks on. Walter lies in bed next to Laura, writing calculations on her hip in black ink.
Are you insane?
That fucking number.
At the base of the steps to heaven, the young Walter spies on the professor and Laura having sex on the grass. Walter walks through a bare house. He spots his saxophone lying on a pillow in the corner. He sits at the bottom of a flight of stairs, writing feverishly.
When I circled every 23rd letter of her note, it became clear. The number had gone after me.
He spells out the words, kill her. He weeps desperately.
And now it wanted her.
We're in this room. You gotta get out. It's coming for you. What? I can't stop it.
What?
The number. No.
Leave
Don't.
Me alone.
No.
She picks up a knife from the bed.
You think you have the guts to use it? Go ahead. Kill me.
I love you.
I've never loved you. Ever. How could I? How could anyone? You're pathetic. Just like your father. Get out!
She gets the knife and slashes at his forearm, drawing blood. He looks up at her darkly.
I was right. She was in danger. I just didn't realize the danger was me.
Walter buries Laura's body at the bottom of the steps to heaven. He removes her ankle chain. From among the trees, the dog Ned observes Walter silently.
Hey, Laura. Laura?
The bearded professor crosses to the bed and picks up the knife from the bloodstained sheets. He is escorted away by police. Walter, his left arm still wounded, appears at the front desk of the King Edward Hotel and painstakingly lays out banknotes with his right hand. The male receptionist, who has long hair and a birthmark on his face, reaches across to give him the key to room 23.
What began as a suicide note turned into something more.
Walter sits in the hotel room, frantically churning out pages from an old manual typewriter.
Much, much more.
He tears out and annotates pieces from the newspaper.
Three.
23.
I can see it. It's everywhere.
It's everywhere. It's everywhere.
We're fighting games.
He covers the walls and himself in black scrawl.
Shit. It's not true. It's not true. It does not. It does not.
He crouches in a corner of the hotel bathroom. The sink, the walls, even his own feet are covered in jagged writing. His face is motionless. Across it plays a tiny fleck of reflected light. He looks down. In his hands he holds the silver ankle chain from which the light is reflected. Walter lurches out from the bathroom and launches himself out of the window. The typescript of the novel sits on the side table. Walter lies face down in the gutter. The fingers of one hand twitch. Walter, his face heavily bandaged, sits in hospital. Professor Leary consults with another doctor.
They thought it was the fall.
He doesn't remember anything.
It's not uncommon in cases of such severe head injury. He could recover his memory tomorrow or never.
Well, of course, you have to factor in a history of mental instability in the patient's family. His own father attempted suicide. He just managed to be a little more successful at it.
Because the trauma of Laura appeared to be fiction.
You know all that scribbling?
Severe graphomania, the rantings of a delirious mind, some sort of a survivor's guilt mixed up with a numerology obsession. You have your hands full, Doctor.
I'll do what I can.
Say, may I have this book? Thank you.
My novel? My confession?
My name is Dr. Nathaniel.
I never saw it again. Some injuries can be healed over time. Some are just too hard to deal with. So my brain just blocked out the terrible thing I had done. And the reasons why.
I can't.
If I never see you again.
I hope not.
I hope not.
Don't come back, though.
Okay.
As Walter is discharged from Nathaniel's Institute, he walks down the steps and straight into Agatha, knocking a boxed cake from her hands.
Oh, my God. I'm so sorry. Oh, no.
Agatha knew nothing about my past.
Oh, you owned a cake.
That made two of us. I was free for now. But the number found a new victim. The number left me alone for 13 years. Until the night she found my book. Or the book found her.
Professor Leary tapes over Walter's name on the manuscript with the name Topsy Kretz. Through layers of scrawled words, Walter's sad face comes into focus. He stands forlornly touching the wall of the hotel room. Agatha enters quietly behind him.
This is where I wrote it all. It was me. I'm a murderer.
I don't know what happened to you, but I do know this. You weren't a bad person who got better. You were a sick person who became well. You're a wonderful husband, and you're the best father a son could ever have. And what would Robin do without you?
You know, I let an innocent man go on suffering for my horrible sin.
We're all broken, Walter. Remember, you told me your life started when you met me. My life began that day, too.
You didn't know who I was. I didn't know who I was. I want you to leave, Egg. You need to leave before.
Before what?
She gets out the book.
Damn it, Walter. This is who you were. This is not who you are. This is not who you are.
I'm a killer. I have killed someone.
I killed someone.
I could do it again.
You think you could do it again? You think you're a killer? Here, and take this. You go ahead and do it. If you're a killer, then kill me. Look around at all the beautiful 23s. You don't want to disappoint them, do you? Do it! I love you.
No! Don't you say that.
I love you.
No, you can't!
He holds a knife to her throat.
No one can.
Walter runs from the room, leaving Agatha sobbing. Walter walks out from the King Edward Hotel. He stands in the road. Ned the dog observes him from the opposite pavement. Walter sees a bus approaching at speed. He remains in the middle of the road, turning to meet the huge vehicle bearing down on him. Robin's cry makes Walter step out of the way at the very last moment. Robin runs from Isaac across to his father.
There's no such thing as destiny. There are only different choices.
Agatha emerges from the hotel as Walter embraces Robin. He drops the knife. Agatha runs across to join in the family hug. Isaac discreetly withdraws.
Some choices are easy, some aren't. Those are the really important ones, the ones that define us as people.
The Lord is my shepherd, there is nothing I lack. In green pastures, you let me graze. To safe waters, you lead me. You restore my
13 years ago, I made the wrong choice. Guide me along the right path for the sake of your life. I needed to put it right, and not just for my sake.
The bearded professor walks sadly away from the final interment of Laura Tollins. Beneath a tree nearby stands Barnaby the gardener with Ned the dog at his heels. Robin stands in the kitchen reading a note.
To die there in the street would have been easy. But it wouldn't have been justice. At least not the justice fathers teach their sons about.
Walter is visited in prison by Agatha and Robin.
I'll be sentenced in a week or so. My lawyer says the judge will look kindly upon me for turning myself in. Maybe it's not the happiest of endings, but it's the right one. Someday I'll be up for parole, and we can go on living our lives. It's only a matter of time. Of course, time is just a counting system. Numbers. With meaning attached to them.
He spots the time, 2:15.
Isn't it?
A caption appears reading, "Be sure your sins will find you out." Numbers 32:23. The end.
I got me a badge, a bright shiny badge. Painting the crest in yellow and blue. I've got me a club, an exclusive club. Doesn't include a place for you. Way that you made. It's in the way that you grieve all of the loss. You don't know when you're better off or at what cost. Got it good. The banality of evil, benevolent mother, smother the child, the perpetrators are in denial.